I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome back to Radio Times. The relationship between Amazon and the publisher Hachette has grown increasingly frosty, apparently over the pricing of ebooks. Amazon has been using its leverage over book sales and making it difficult for its customers to buy books published by Hachette. Some of the Hachette authors, including Stephen Colbert, have criticized Amazon for its tough tactics. Well, this standoff is taking an interesting turn with the release today of The Silkworm, published by Hachette and written by Robert Galbraith, whose real name is J.K. Rowling. Amazon was founded 20 years ago and today is a retail behemoth that controls a sizable portion of the book buying, selling, and even publishing market. So today in Radio Times, what is this feud all about? What does it tell us about the future of books? And we have two guests who have joined us by telephone. Jeremy Greenfield is editorial director of Digital Book World. That's a website dedicated to covering the world of ebooks and digital publishing. He's also a contributor to Forbes, where he writes about ebooks and digital publishing. Jeremy Greenfield, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
Also with us, David Streitfeld. He covers technology for the New York Times and last year was part of a team awarded the Pulitzer Prize for explanatory reporting. And David Streitfeld, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Nice to be here.
David, let me begin with you. You began reporting earlier this year about Amazon essentially discouraging its customers from buying books published by Hachette. What were some of the tactics or approaches that Amazon did to discourage its customers?
They have several tactics. The central one is they delay the shipping of the book. Amazon usually prides itself on getting customers' books in 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, as fast as it can. But with the Hachette books, they started delaying the shipments by 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Actually, today, with the new J.K. Rowling book, I see they have the longest delay yet, which is they say the book will ship in 1 to 2 months. In Amazon terms, it's an eternity. They say that at least. Sometimes people say they get them quicker than the 3 weeks or the month that Amazon is promising. But if you want to order this book, if you want to read this book anytime this summer, you're not going to order it if it says 2 months from now. That's one thing they do. Another thing they do is Amazon usually discounts its books, particularly frontlist books, 20%, 25%, 30%. With the Hachette books, they're cutting the discount to 10% often, which is what the Rowling book is. Sometimes they're cutting it to nothing. That's another way of discouraging buyers and telling Hachette that if we want to, we're not going to sell any of your books.
Let me go to you, Jeremy, and we're talking about Amazon that has billed itself as the Earth's most customer-centric company. Are there risks for a company like Amazon to make it so difficult for some of their customer base?
Absolutely. Amazon has, throughout its history, been ruthless about being extremely good at serving its customers when it comes to giving them everything they want at the lowest prices and quicker than anyone else possibly can. Amazon even patented the one-click buy technology that no other e-commerce retailer is really allowed to use, making it just that much easier mm-hmm. for people to get what they want when they want. And Amazon is putting its reputation on the line with its negotiations with Hachette, with Bonnier in Germany, with Time Warner Video. And that signals to us that the stakes here for Amazon must be incredibly high, because I think following the company for several years, and David has followed it for a lot longer, it's very rare to see Amazon do much that isn't explicitly in the customer interest, or at the very least doesn't explicitly go against the customer interest, i.e. separating the customer from the supplier and from the goods that they want.
And I know, David, that the Amazon is notoriously mum about how it operates. But from my reading, and a lot of it from what you have been writing, is that it seems to be about the pricing of ebooks. Is that the issue between Amazon and Hachette?
It seems to be. Basically, Amazon wants a larger chunk of the ebook revenue, and there's only three people who get paid with an ebook: the publisher, the writer, and the distributor, the bookstore. i.e. Amazon, and Amazon wants to take some of Hachette's share and feels that it created this platform, it is the one selling it, it deserves the money, and Hachette sees this as the slippery road to non-existence, and so is digging in its heels.
And do you know what, I mean, do you know what they want to sell a Hachette book for? Is there any, do we know what dollars are being argued about?
The amount that they sell the book for, Jeremy, correct me if I'm wrong, varies from title to title, and it can vary from day to day on each title. But in general, I think Hachette gets 30%, Jeremy, and Amazon would like, a significant percentage of that. That's the general feeling. I don't think any official numbers have been published.
And is it because Amazon, David, wants the money, or they want to put Hachette somehow out of business?
Well, I will channel Amazon for a moment. Okay. They don't really say explicitly too often what they want, but their feeling is we're in this for the customer. We want to make ebooks and everything else we sell as cheap as possible, get it to the customer as quickly as we can, be the best, most customer-centric company in the universe. And to give them credit, they generally have tried to do that as much as possible. One reason Amazon is so successful is that the material, the books, are so cheap. And so they feel that they're in the service of a greater good here, and that Hachette is a multi-billion dollar company that is hurting readers, hurting customers by keeping too much of the money for itself. Amazon feels that if there are no middlemen between the writer of the book and the ultimate reader of the book, the world is going to be better off. Obviously, people feel, well, there would still be one middleman, and it would be Amazon, and that would be entirely problematic. I think that's somewhat how Amazon feels. They feel they're being unjustly vilified here for trying to make books cheaper.
Well, and I realize that you were channeling, as you said, Amazon there. But Jeremy, I can imagine the arguments back at that. What is the pushback against Amazon?
Well, Hachette, for Hachette, this is potentially an existential issue because, as David pointed out, Amazon views Hachette as a middleman between the creator of the content, the author, and the ultimate reader. And Amazon is all about efficiency, and so eliminating middlemen is what the company, one of the best things the company can do to increase its efficiency and lower prices for consumers. So when Amazon goes after Hachette margin, that really threatens Hachette's ability to operate profitably. So the issue that Hachette is also looking at is what they would consider a diverse retail ecosystem. If Amazon is able to price ebooks lower, what that does is puts pressure on Barnes & Noble's digital business Nook to price ebooks lower, it puts pressure on Apple's iBooks business to price ebooks lower, and it puts pressure on physical retailers to price print books lower. Because if you can get a bestseller, The Goldfinch, last year over Thanksgiving for $1.79 as an ebook, why would you go to a store and pay $20 or $30 to get the hardcover edition? It almost makes no sense. So Hachette is not only thinking about its own existence and its own ability to make a profit and continue to take risks on books year after year, but it's thinking about its other trading partners, which Amazon is its largest and most profitable trading partner, but there are many, many others out there. And the people who run Hachette are also not ignorant to corporate history. They realize that if Amazon is now 30 or 40 or 50% of their business, as that number increases and other retailers are put under pressure or out of business, it gives Amazon a much stronger negotiating position for future negotiations. So today, Amazon might want a couple percentage points more of margin from Hachette when it sells books and ebooks. Tomorrow, it might demand even more, and Hachette would be unable to resist because too much of its business is already running through Amazon.
But do you think, Jeremy, that Amazon wants to put Hachette and these other publishing companies, essentially wants to put them out of business and basically take over the market for itself?
I think David said it perfectly right. You know, if we could channel Amazon, what the company would probably say is we are trying to bring consumers goods at lower prices. I think what Hachette would say in defense is that Amazon is looking at us like we are the producers of flat-screen televisions, and if they can put pressure on us to lower the prices of our televisions that we sell them, then we can find ways to pressure our suppliers and so on, and everyone gets more efficient. And that's sort of the classic Walmart model, and it's created a lot of very low prices for people. What Hachette would say, and what Hachette did say in a statement in response to Amazon several weeks ago, is that books are different. And this is something that is widely believed in the publishing industry and may take convincing outside of the publishing industry, that books aren't like flat-screen televisions, that they are unique pieces of culture and not a commodity. So while Amazon might say all the things that David said, I think Hachette would respond by saying, you know, you don't really understand what we do. That said, Amazon is starting to understand what book publishers do because Amazon is running its own quickly growing book publishing operation.
David, let me go back to you. But in the meantime, while this feud between Amazon and Amazon is discouraging or delaying the shipment of books published by Hachette, it seems that opens up opportunities for, I don't know, maybe it is Walmart or some or Barnes & Noble to come in and be that middleman, be that seller of those books to the customers.
I think they're trying. Apple is trying to promote Hachette books just recently, and some of the other larger bookstore chains and certainly the independents are trying to promote their own Hachette books. They see this as an opening. Part of the problem for them is that Hachette is not a brand that the consumer readily identifies with. They recognize the name Donna Tartt. They recognize J.K. Rowling's pseudonym, right, but they don't say, ah, there's a Hachette book. I'd like it. And so that somewhat is preventing this from becoming a bigger issue among consumers. Amazon says, you know, there's no problem here. We still have our direct relationship with the consumer, and they must be hoping, I'm sure they're hoping, that this all blows over very quickly and is forgotten. Amazon always takes a long-term view and says, you know, how will this look 6 months from now, 6 years from now, 10 years from now? And they may still be right.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about Amazon's feud with Hachette, and talking with us is David Streitfeld, covers technology for the New York Times, Jeremy Greenfield, editorial director of Digital Book World, and we want to hear from you. Are books like flat-screen TVs? Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. And more to the point, have you taken a side on this issue? And you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Burnaby Volvo in Huntington Valley supports WHYY. Burnaby Volvo's Wonder of Summer event is going on now, featuring a variety of new models. Wonder of Summer details and full inventory at burnabyvolvo.com, 215-947-6363.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows six enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
Many people have honored their ancestors by researching their family history. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll speak with an author who traveled back in time to learn the secret of his great-great-great-grandmother's rose. Plus, dollar weed, penny wort, and answers to all your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
There's still time to sign up for the Young Journalist Summer Camp at WHYY's Hamilton Public Media Commons. Learn to produce multimedia news stories as our teachers take you through the production process. More at WHYY.org/camps.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking about the spat between Amazon and Hachette and some other publishing companies and how that could affect book buyers, consumers, the book industry, authors, and books themselves. And again, talking with Jeremy Greenfield and David Streitfeld. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. David, you were saying that not many people know, you know, who Hachette publishes, but you've got Stephen Colbert out there, James Patterson, I think Malcolm Gladwell, J.K. Rowling now using a pseudonym. There are some pretty big name names that are published by Hachette, and that's got to count for something in this back and forth.
Oh no, the people certainly recognize the names. I mean, Colbert, Rowling. What they don't recognize is Hachette as a brand, and it's just something they have no knowledge of, and they have no direct relationship with Hachette. They can buy one of the books in a bookstore, but Amazon has a direct relationship with the reader. Hachette has had somewhat, I think, difficulty in talking to the people who would buy these books because it has to go through middlemen like Amazon.
Right. Anything you want to add to that, Jeremy?
Yeah, the authors who have gone out and spoken up against Amazon, some quite vociferously, I don't think have made a dent yet in Amazon's brand image. There was some early reporting done by a brand firm, YouGov, an international brand firm, and Amazon's reputation among consumers surveyed weekly had hardly budged through the end of May. So all these authors, it seems like, from the publishing industry, look at all of these big-name authors. Colbert does it on television, ganging up on Amazon, but it hasn't really seemed to get through to consumers. And, you know, ultimately, books are just not that interesting or sexy to people that this kind of thing is reaching, you know, the average consumer. And Amazon, in its statement about this, pointed out that, you know, Hachette is roughly 1% of the goods that it sells or less. So it's not like it's affecting a huge part of Amazon's business, whereas Hachette, we'll see the numbers come out in the next few months and the next year, is probably being affected quite heavily.
Well, we have a tweet from Diane. She says she's fed up with Amazon's bullying. I canceled my Amazon Prime membership today. But what you're saying, Jeremy, is most people are not responding the way Diane did.
That's what it seems like, and we will see more as time goes on. I mean, we're right in the middle of this right now. But again, you know that Amazon hates to see things like that, even one customer who is vocally dissatisfied. So the stakes for the retailer must be incredibly high.
I notice in the sort of back and forth, the arguments related to this case, David, is that self-published authors seem to be on the side of Amazon against the publishing companies. Help us understand that dynamic.
That's true. There's a fair amount of bitterness out there among self-published authors and Amazon published authors, or two different groups, toward the New York City publishing world. They probably often have tried to be published by New York. It didn't work out. And their bitterness is incredible. And so they're saying, in support of Amazon, we'd be better off if the New York publishing world, if the gatekeepers just went away.
Right.
If we had a kind of flat environment where everyone can publish a book and then the world can discover how good it is. You don't have to go through an editor in New York and their hoity-toity ways, and we'll all be much happier.
And does that, I mean, do first-time or self-published publishers, can they make a living selling through Amazon? Do we know?
Some do, and some have been very successful at it. They've been early adapters to a new business model, and those tend to be the most successful. There seems to be different views on this. Some say a world where everyone can be published will be a much more democratic world. Great books will be available very cheaply. Others say you're just going to have a chaos of everybody publishing their, I don't know, childhood poems and competing in the marketplace, and all the reviews on Amazon will be done by their friends or their mother and their pseudonym talking about how great they are. And those are people
I've read
crazy.
Those, yes. But I wonder too, Jeremy, which is just, you know, how low can a price go and an author, even a well-established author, be able to make a living? If you're charging, let's say, $1.79 for a book, how the heck is an author supposed to survive?
Well, if you're a self-published author and the bills you have to pay aren't for office space and salaries and health insurance, then you don't need to sell a book for a lot of money if you can sell a lot of copies. You know, Hugh Howey, the self-published author of the smash hit Wool series, selling his books at very, very, very low prices. I think 99 cents for each of the five parts of Wool, and I think you can get the whole thing for $3.99 or $4.99. And he has not a lot of expenses. So in a world where everyone is a publisher, the cost of doing business goes down. And, you know, we also have to remember that the business model under which these self-published authors operate and the margins that they're getting from Amazon are different than what publishers are getting. Right now, publishers are operating under basically a wholesale model where they sell Amazon the ebook at a fixed price, and Amazon can sell it more or less at whatever price it wants, and that's one of the things at issue here. The self-published authors, you know, set the price of their books and pretty much get 60 to 70% of the revenue from those books. If they're getting 25% royalties working through a publisher, they're actually potentially making a lot less money every time an ebook is sold if they're working through a big publisher. So the economics of the thing vary greatly depending on how one publishes. But I'm also mystified by the amount of it's hard to imagine that it's anything but bitterness among self-published authors talking about what's going on with Amazon and Hachette right now. And I'd love to ask David,
sure,
you know, why
ahead.
Do you think it is that many self-published authors view book publishing as this zero-sum game where it's us against them and there can be only one winner?
David?
I think we're in an era now where the individual voice is held paramount as something that cannot be disputed, that your opinion is just as good as this guy who has spent 40 years studying the issue. And so I am out here in Kansas or Idaho, and I have written this book, and it is just as good as the book that won the National Book Award and got all of the votes from the gatekeepers in New York City. And that is what these people are saying. Every author I've ever met believes they are a great writer and that their sales are being held back by other forces, that the gatekeepers are preventing them from selling as many copies as they should. And now that people can self-publish, they can realize that dream, or at least they think they can.
And that's David Streitfeld, covers technology for the New York Times. Also with us, Jeremy Greenfield, editorial director of Digital Book World. We are talking about the feud between Amazon and Hachette. It also involves other book publishers and what it means for the publishing industry, for the reading public as well, for writers as well. And lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Let me get Jack from West Trenton to join us. And Jack, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Go ahead, Jack.
Thank you, Marty. Thanks for your time.
Sure, go ahead.
I see you as a bitter, democratically oriented, self-published Amazon guy. And everything David just said would have been my articulated position, I think. That is to say, I was a published nonfiction author. I decided to write a novel because, like Bennett Cerf once said, we all think we're great novelists at least once, but a great writer would be someone who could write it twice. The Hachettes of the world are not interested in our manuscripts. If we have a gifted agent or if we have some other portfolio in the public domain, we might get a read. The only avenue open to us is through the Amazons of the world, and they have a publishing arm called CreateSpace, of which I am a subscriber. You put together your manuscript, you send them a PDF, they take a look at it, they send you an editorial review, you make a few corrections, you give them some cover art, and you're good to go. and for a couple $1,000s, you are a published author. You can price it anywhere you want, and you can retain 30% of the royalties for yourself, and the middleman, i.e. publisher, is cut out of the loop. I don't have a problem with that, but my question for your guests
is, go ahead.
Are these publishers, in fact, slated for extinction in the Internet era?
The publishers, meaning like publishers like Hachette?
Yep, I think they're dinosaurs.
Well, Jack, just a quick question to you. Are you making a living that way, selling your book through Amazon?
Well, you know, I only published it April 28th, and I've made dozens of dollars, maybe even hundreds.
Maybe hundreds, okay.
Maybe hundreds. No, it's not my day job.
I mean, I'm a
criminal lawyer by trade. It's a criminal law book. You know, it's a crime scene type of novel. If I sell a couple of thousand copies, I'll consider myself a huge success, although 980 of them might have one of those daggers on the New York Times.
I hear you.
You know,
I hear
personally
you.
Bought. But, no, I don't expect to make a living, but I expect that it's a process that I was able to write the book in 6 months and publish it in four more that never would have happened in the traditional publishing world.
No, I hear you, and I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Jeremy, that is the compelling argument for the self-published author.
And I think that's wonderful. This is, to me, the most amazing and positive development in book publishing in the past decade is the democratization of the availability of access to large audiences for people like Jack. And I think it's wonderful that he published his book. I don't think that means necessarily that the big New York book publishers with large corporate overheads who are essentially middlemen are extinct. Hillary Clinton's book came out a few weeks ago, and if you think that Hillary Clinton is going to upload her manuscript onto CreateSpace and have some anonymous editor give her a couple of corrections and a little bit of feedback and then, you know, put her book for sale on Amazon, if that's the model for the Hillary Clintons of the future, then I think you don't really know much about how book publishing works. That said, I think that people like Jack, who maybe were rejected by publishers or didn't even consider publishers and can go and publish themselves, is just a fantastic development. And I would ask Jack, why is it that because he could do the thing the way he did it, that people doing it in a different way will be extinct someday?
Well, in fact, that was my question to you, David, which is if we're talking about these two models here, can they coexist, or in the sort of the fight between the behemoths, Amazon and Hachette, someone's going to win and someone's going to lose?
I think ideally they would coexist. I'm a little less optimistic than Jeremy that they will end up coexisting. I'm not sure that in Amazon's view of the world, and in most writers, which would be the self-published writers' view of the world, there is a need for the big New York publishers like Hachette. And this is not an era that is particularly kind to middlemen. You're supposed to be able to, and you want to be able to, do it yourself. And at a certain point, a New York publisher, the structure does not end up being financially viable. If they're not getting in enough revenue, they can't pay the editors, and the whole system collapses. So I'm not sure that we won't see a dwindling away and then maybe a rapid fall of the New York publishers, for better and for worse.
I mean, it reminds me a bit of what happened with the music industry. Do you see parallels there, David?
I think there are a lot of parallels, and the music industry is utterly changed from the way it was 10 years ago. The bands complain that they don't make the money that they used to, but it is a lot more open. A lot more people are getting their music heard. I should add one other thing here with the with the books. One group that doesn't seem to have its voice heard too often is the reader. I can see how a system without the New York publisher is much better for writers. They can get their material published. But the gatekeepers do serve a role for the reader. They say, this is good, this is something that you'll enjoy, we don't guarantee it, but we can give you a strong assurance that you will like it. Without gatekeepers, I think the reader is going to be a bit adrift.
Let me get Bobby from Mount Airy to join our conversation on Radio Times. And Bobby, go ahead, you're on the air.
Yeah, my concern was Amazon's tactics, and as a consumer and as an avid reader, For me, when somebody opened the discussion today at Amazon's concern for efficiency and for its customer, that falls short. For me, Amazon's concern is for its bottom line, which is its profit. And that's what we're really talking about. Its services are all in service to that. And what I see is, for me, is the Amazon-Walmart analogy. In other words, this is a company that I believe does not treat its people well, that has that is growing in power by leaps and bounds, and it is going to leave us with this kind of odd kind of, in other words, it may look good to a writer now, it may look bad to a publisher now, but there's a much bigger issue at stake. This company and its tactics. We don't like bullying. We do all kinds of stories on bullying, whether it's a 12-year-old or what have you. And this is a bully. This is not just a successful company. This is somebody that's taken power and has marched it as far as it can march. And that, and I think everyone will lose unless there's some kind of balance brought to the table.
Well, Bobby, no, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Jimmy, let me give you a chance to respond to her comments. Agree? Disagree?
I think that it's a little bit simplistic to look at Amazon like a bully in this situation. This is business. And this is how companies like Amazon advance their businesses to make more money next year than they did last year. They negotiate, and retailers will negotiate with suppliers. And the tactics that Amazon is using, some of which David described, others of which perhaps even more powerful were left out, are tools that Amazon has in its negotiation. It doesn't necessarily create a really friendly partner, but at the end of the day, Amazon might argue that it creates one that will be more profitable for it, its employees, its shareholders, and cheaper for its customers, which ultimately is Amazon's responsibility. But on to the idea of Amazon's profit, one of the things that's so mystifying about this, and may explain a lot of it in a way, is that Amazon has an extremely low corporate profit margin. We don't know how much money Amazon makes on the $22 billion or so a year it made last year selling content like ebooks and books and movies and such. But we do know that corporately, on its roughly $74 billion in revenue, it had a 0.37% profit margin. Is that because it makes very little money selling books? Is that because it invests the money it makes selling books in other areas of its business? We don't really know the answer to that question. So when it comes to why Amazon is so furiously going after Hachette's profit margin and Time Warner's profit margin, it may be to give itself a little bit of padding on that razor-thin margin. And just to give you an example of what profit margins are like...
Well, you know what, Jeremy? Only because we're up on a break here, just hold on to that thought. We'll get back to our conversation about Amazon, its feud with Hachette and other book publishers. Jeremy Greenfield, our guest, also with us, David Streitfeld. And looks like the phones have exploded at 1-888-477-9499. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Simpson Meadows, a retirement community in Downingtown, PA, in Chester County. Managed by Simpson Senior Services, a nonprofit with a long-standing tradition of care. Simpson Meadows provides personal care for senior adults, along with memory care, respite, and independent living. A specially designed personal care neighborhood staffed with licensed nurses provides assistance with daily tasks to help residents remain as independent as possible. More at simpsonmeadows.org.
I'm John Oliver, and welcome to whatever this is.
On the next Fresh Air, John Oliver, the former Daily Show correspondent who hosted last summer while Jon Stewart directed his movie, now has his own show of political satire on HBO called Last Week Tonight. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Child's dream of a better future carried on a boat he built with his own hands.
I crossed the river on a small raft. All I was doing, God willing, was to make a better future for myself.
Huddled masses of children making the journey to America alone. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. Just a recap, 20 years ago, Amazon was an upstart internet bookstore. Today, it sells a sizable percent of print and digital books in the country, along with just about everything else that consumers want to buy. And it's currently in a fight with Hachette Book Group, and it's been playing hardball, making it hard for consumers to buy books published by Hachette. Talking about what this feud is all about with Jeremy Greenfield, editorial director of Digital Book World, also a contributor to Forbes, and David Streitfeld covers technology for the New York Times, part of a team of reporters last year that won a Pulitzer Prize for explanatory reporting. Jeremy, just a quick response, because I do want to get back to our callers. You were talking about Amazon's profits, such as they are.
Right. Amazon had a 0.37% profit margin last year on $74 billion of revenue. Book publishers roughly make about 10% profit margin. That's in line with other areas of media. The highest profit margins come in software, pharmaceuticals, oil and gas. That's about 15-20% across the industry. But retail, which is where Amazon is 3-4%. Walmart made about 3% profit margin on almost $500 billion revenue last year. But Amazon's main competitors in the sort of future for the internet, Apple, Facebook, Google, they are all huge companies of varying sizes, and they all make roughly about a 20% profit margin. And so Amazon is competing with these companies with the support of investors and not really making that much profit.
Oh, that's interesting. David, let me toss something else out on the table here. One is that yesterday Amazon announced a device. You wrote about it. It's called the Fire Phone. And you both referenced the fact that Amazon is also playing some hardball with Time Warner, refusing to sell home video movies that are put out by Time Warner. So on the one hand, trying to enter the iPhone world, and also taking on the video world. What is going on here, as you understand it?
Amazon's ambitions are boundless. It wants to essentially accompany people as they move about their day, and every time they want to communicate with other people, every time they want to be entertained, every time they want to buy something, every time they even want to identify something they haven't seen before, don't understand, Amazon wants it to be mediated through Amazon, wow, through this device you hold in your hand that used to be called the phone. And it's obviously a large question of the extent to which it can succeed in doing this, how many people want to be carrying such a device, how successful Amazon will be. But to the extent it is successful, this is going to be an even larger question for book publishers and other media content developers, because Amazon will have even more of their market.
The United States of Amazon. that
right,
in our future.
Exactly.
Let me get Chris from Graduate Hospital here in Philadelphia to join our conversation. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question, I suppose, would be, to what extent do the guys think that Amazon ultimately is trying to shift more consumption behavior of books? I think when you look at, first of all, you can't even compare a book to a digital TV. The cost of resources that go into a TV can half almost every 2 years, where paper's paper, ink is ink. The cost of those resources aren't really going to change. As you kind of shift a consumer away from a paper book into something more digital, right? Years ago, people read maybe one book at a time because you're not going to carry around 15 books. But now with digital e-readers, people will read 15 books at a time. So I guess my question is, is it possible that really they're just trying to shift consumption behavior in the way maybe Apple did for the iPod music 10 years ago?
Okay, fair enough. Jeremy, were you able to, it wasn't the greatest phone line there, but essentially asking whether you think, or you and David think, that Amazon is trying to shift consumer behavior away, when it comes to buying books, and I guess more people reading things like e-books.
I think that Amazon is, in a way, trying to do that. I think part of it is that it's very profitable for Amazon to do so. Amazon really dominates the digital reading business in the U.S., but also in many countries overseas, in a way that it doesn't dominate the retailing of physical books. And the retailing of digital books, especially self-published books, where Amazon takes a straight 30 to 40%, is very, very profitable for the company versus a physical book where it might have a certain percent that it gets, but it uses that percent to discount and bring customers into the door. So I do think that Amazon as a company is probably one of its strategies is to shift people in that direction. It also takes away one of the centers of power from its biggest competitor in book retailing in the U.S., which is Barnes & Noble, which operates over 1,000 retail and college bookstores that people can go into, browse, and buy books from. And as more people buy digitally, that hurts Barnes & Noble.
Let me get Bob from Trenton to join our conversation. Bob, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'd make a comment about, I'll call it the ecology of this situation. The comment that was made earlier about bullying and how companies negotiate, liken it to Home Depot and Walmart and so on, when they have no choice but to cheapen the product itself. When they get pushed into a corner to make it cheaper, they thin the walls of the metal or the wiring inside, whether it's a light fixture or a garden hose, and so those products end up in the landfill a year or two or three later instead of being lasting things. And I think it's clear that what will happen with books is the very same thing, whether it's the binding or the cover or the paper. These will not be books that will be put on your library shelf for 50 or 100 years to pass on to your children. These will be books that will end up in the landfill because they just won't last. And that's a whole different comment to what we're talking about, but I think it is the end result that, you know, it's not sustainable. In a different sort of way.
So. I hear you, and I see you're also an architect as well. David, Bob is concerned that it will literally cheapen books. They'll be of lesser quality if Amazon prevails.
I think that's a good point, that the argument that made by the New York publishers, and it's a reasonable argument, is that Amazon is interested in selling products. And their argument is, we're interested in producing something lasting. There are obviously a lot of books produced out of New York that are not particularly lasting. But I do think there is a valid argument that they are the upholders of the culture. And without them, the culture will suffer.
I wanted to pick up on something that one of our callers raised earlier about the treatment of employees. And I know, David, that some of your reporting looking at these gigantic warehouses and what people are paid and what it's like to work at one of these gigantic warehouses run by Amazon.
Yeah, especially in Europe, where they take a somewhat sharper view of this. A lot of the Amazon warehouses have come in for criticism. Reporters have gone in undercover to work there and reported that it's not a particularly pleasant experience. Amazon, though, you have to give them credit for being consistent. They work their people hard, both in the corporate offices and in the warehouses, all to serve this consumer, all to serve the people who are coming to it and buying these things so they can get it to them as cheaply as possible and as quickly as possible. That, it doesn't excuse whatever goes on in the warehouses, but if Amazon were making huge profits, I think they would have much more bad press in Europe and maybe even here for how difficult it is to work in one of the warehouses.
Let me get Drew from Marion Station to join our conversation. Drew, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. I'm a local author. I've got a book up on Amazon, both in print and an ebook. And for me, Amazon is kind of a double-edged sword because on the one hand, it's great. It makes it easy for people to get my book. It puts it out in front of an audience. But they also have all of the power in the relationship. And, you know, hearing about things like Hachette, if for some reason Amazon noticed me, they could, and I pissed them off for some reason, they could make my book disappear. And I just find that relationship a little bit troubling.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, hearing, I guess, both sides of this issue. Jeremy, your thoughts?
This is a very interesting comment to me, and I'm glad that Drew made it, because many self-published authors who are trashing Hachette right now and calling Hachette a dinosaur and saying that Amazon is the good guy in this scenario, and for the record, I don't think there are any good guys or bad guys in this negotiation. I don't think they're thinking about themselves as suppliers. They also are Amazon suppliers, and Hachette's profit margin is 10%, and while 10% for a roughly billion-dollar company looks appetizing to a retailer like Amazon, self-published authors are making 60 to 70%. And in other countries outside of the U.S., they're not making as much from Amazon. So I think that if people like Drew should realize that if it's Hachette today, who is it going to be tomorrow? And they should worry about there being other places where they can ply their trade, because if they can go to Barnes & Noble's Nook and publish through there, or Kobo or Apple, then they have options, and then those companies need to compete for their business, and it can help them keep their margins higher. Although I don't think 60-70% is going to be a reality for self-publishing forever.
Drew, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Lee from Forked River has to say. Lee, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I wanted to say that I am attempting to not shop with Amazon anymore, but that's difficult because sometimes they're the only supplier you can find. But my reasoning is that the Allentown Morning Call did an expose about the warehouse there in Allentown, that it was not air-conditioned and it was so hot that rather than pay to have it air-conditioned, they were paying an ambulance crew to wait outside for the workers that got sick.
In fact, Lee, we did an interview with the author of that report for the Morning Call. And David, you have reported on this as well. Do you want to weigh in on Lee's observation?
That was the one of the most striking stories I've ever read about a modern company, that Allentown story, where not just one ambulance, as I recall, but they had a row of ambulances to catch the workers, essentially, as they fell and take them away. Closing the warehouse because it was too hot never seemed to occur to them. It was definitely the worst moment, or the worst moment that we know about in Amazon's history.
Did it get fixed, do you know, David?
It was fixed under pressure from the publicity. Amazon responded and put in air conditioning, and the problem seems to have been fixed.
Let me throw something else in, and this is a complicated story. I want to throw something else in because Amazon took on the big six publishers, took them to court last year, and this was over ebook prices. It involved Apple as well. Jeremy, perhaps you could just take us quickly through what that was about and how that is related to what we're talking about today.
Well, it's interesting that you say Amazon took the publishers and Apple to court, because Amazon actually did not.
Okay.
It was the U.S. Department of Justice. And the thinking is the U.S. Department of Justice was given a lot of information and data by Amazon that helped it formulate its case and make its decision to sue five of the six largest publishers and Apple. But essentially the issue was in 2010 when the iPad came out, Steve Jobs and his lieutenants realized that they needed to have a credible ebook play on the iPad with iBooks, and that they needed to get the big publishers to be on the platform, but they didn't want to sell the books at a loss at $9.99 the way Amazon was. They wanted to make money. And so what they did was they helped the publishers together in a way devise a scheme in which they would be able to set the prices of books, and Apple would take a fixed cut, and that furthermore, all of the other retailers like Amazon would have to sign a similar contract. And so when the publishers did this, it raised the attention of the Department of Justice, because prices went up across an industry, across many of the suppliers in the industry, and consumers were paying more for ebooks. Now, what it did was it also allowed Apple and Barnes & Noble to gain a toehold in this growing industry. Amazon was something like 90% of the market at the time. It didn't serve them well in the end, because they went to court and now they're paying massive fines for colluding to raise the prices of ebooks.
Mm. And what we're talking about now, I guess, David, is sort of the other side of this, which is trying to get the price as low as possible.
Well, and Amazon would have said that it was trying to get the price as low as possible originally, and that's why it went to the Department of Justice and said the publishers here are doing something illegal and wrong. And the Department of Justice went and followed up on it and went after the publishers in a very severe way. The publishers often point out that the Department of Justice seemed to be more interested in punishing them than publishing anybody on Wall Street for the excesses that led to the recession. But the Jeremy is right in that that conflict underlies everything going on now, in that it created an enormous amount of bitterness between among the publishers. They're convinced that Amazon is out to get them, and they cite the fact that Amazon seems to have propelled the suit along in the beginning as their evidence.
Well, we could
There's no love lost here between these parties.
No, I hear you. And I appreciate the fact that you both joined us today in Radio Times, walking us through a potentially very complicated issue. David Streitfeld, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And he covers technology for the New York Times. Jeremy Greenfield, thank you very much.
Thanks, Marty.
And he's editorial director of Digital Book World, also a contributor to Forbes. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out about the program, including podcasts and Facebook, Twitter, and much, much more. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, with Sophie Reed. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us. And do